Blog Talk Radio.
Sweeping those streets I used to roam. I love it. Chris Martin with the metaphor for the health, the serial dethroning of the healthcare industry by physicians as the MDities they once were and some who still believe they are. Welcome, everyone. This is Greg Masters. Continuing coverage on this week in health innovation. I'm joined by my co-partner, Dr. Pat Salver.
Who's wondering why I'm not still an MDity. Has this changed? Did I miss it?
Well, you know, all I can say is I don't speak for you. I just, you know, kind of opine, you know, off the cuff. Anyway, we are broadcasting today, Wednesday, April the 10th, 2013. And Pat and I are delighted to say that we get to chat with Jeff Gennell, who is CEO of a company called NoMoreClipboard.com. Jeff has a wide swath of portfolio interests in the health informatics and patient engagement space. So we're going to get to know Jeff and hear what's on his mind and see what's in his forward horizon, so to speak. So, Jeff, are you with us?
I am here.
Excellent. Well, thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to chat with us today. So, first up, Jeff, tell us a little bit about you, and then perhaps bridge us over to No More Clipboard. What's up at No More Clipboard?
Sure. Just a little bit of background on myself. I have been with No More Clipboard for about 7 years, and prior to that, I worked with them for about a year as a consultant. And before getting into the health IT space, I actually spent about 20 years as a marketing consultant, working primarily with healthcare organizations, life science firms, biotech entities. And when I first got involved, it was to help No More Clipboard kind of forge a marketing direction. And as I've continued to work with the organization, I took on a leadership role. And I've really spent probably the last 7 years of my life doing the pick and shovel evangelization work required to promote the concept of electronic patient engagement, and really probably the first 6 years of that was very much like pushing a boulder up a hill. But I'm glad to report that in the last 12 months or so, we've crested the top of the hill, and the rock is starting to roll down the other side. And we're starting to see significant momentum and certainly a shift in attitudes about the concept of sharing data electronically between clinicians and consumers.
So for those of us who aren't in the inner circle of the health informatics conversation, in a general sense, what was the value prop and the motivation to establish No More Clipboard?
Well, when we started No More Clipboard, it was with a pretty simple premise. We believe that it would be important to give consumers a tool that they can use to aggregate, manage, and share all of their health information. And in our early days, we kind of labored under the illusion that we'd built a better mousetrap and that really all we needed to do is go out and promote this to consumers. And as soon as they found out that they could get a No More Clipboard account, they would rush out to do so. We quickly found out we were not only early to the party, but the party had not yet started. It was very apparent early on that consumers were not quite ready for this. In fact, they didn't know what a personal health record was, weren't quite sure why they might need one. And we realized that we really needed to focus on building the category. Not only helping consumers understand the value of being able to manage your health information and some of the benefits that might provide, but also to overcome some of the obstacles and the objections that they face on the provider side. one of the things that we've tried to do from day one is to make sure that No More Clipboard takes a balanced approach. It's not only about helping a consumer organize and manage and share their data, but making sure that when they share it, that it integrates into existing clinical workflow on the provider side. Because if you can't make that work, ultimately you're not going to be successful. And you know, if a patient shows up at a doctor's office and says, hey, I've taken the time to create a personal health record and I want to share this data with you, and the practice says, well, that's nice, but here, go ahead and fill out my paper form in the waiting room, the whole process breaks down. So we put a lot of time, energy, and effort into making sure that we can connect consumers and clinicians electronically, but in meaningful ways that work for both parties.
Well, speaking of that workflow, Pat, do you have any thoughts or questions for Jeff?
Yeah, I'd like to know, Jeff, so do you think patients have evolved on their attitudes around collecting their own data or filling out and keeping PHRs, or is it still, I don't really get why I would need to put any time into this?
Oh, yeah, we've definitely seen some evolution, and it's there are a couple of different segments where you see interest. Certainly younger people who are tech savvy, who use computers and use iPads and iPhones for all of their communication, when they show up at a doctor's office and they're handed a clipboard full of paper forms to fill out, they quite frankly don't know how to react. And in fact, they are not shy about asking, why in the world are you still doing this the old-fashioned way? It is 2013. So we certainly see that younger people, young mothers who are helping to manage the health not only of themselves but of their children, certainly see value here. The other thing though that we're seeing more and more of is it's the people who are either managing a chronic condition for themselves or for a loved one. They're the people who really, really benefit from having a personal health record. These are the folks who are struggling to keep track of information often from a variety of different clinical sources and to be able to make sense of it so that as they or their loved ones move across the continuum of care, that there is consistent, reliable information at every point in that care process. And that not only applies to to an individual that maybe is in their 40s and has been used to using computerized tools and internet tools for some time. One of the things that's been somewhat surprising but really encouraging is that we're seeing people who are normally considered to be on the wrong side of the digital divide get really, really enthusiastic about these tools. As an example, we're working right now with a cardiology practice who said, we've got this patient population, individuals who, for example, have recently undergone cardiac revascularization. They've had a stent inserted or they've had a bypass graft. And these people could really benefit from being more active and engaged in their care. So what this practice did is help these patients set up a personal health record, train them on how to use it, and we were able to populate it with existing data from their electronic health record and from a local health information exchange. But this practice said, we're going to study this carefully. And so what they've done is for the participating patients, they've taken done lab testing at baseline, and then at 6 months and 12 months. And they've also had these patients fill out surveys at baseline, 6 and 12 months, where they're measuring things like patient activation and technology acceptance. And we're now at the point where we've got some data. And we're seeing that these patients, who average age is in their early 70s, are not only more engaged, more active in their care, but we're seeing significant reductions in A1C levels, as an example. And what the patients are telling their physicians and nurses with this practice anecdotally are that, you know, this is the tool that I've been missing. And now that I have this personal health record and I can see my data and I understand it and I can act on it, it's making a real difference, not only in being involved in my care, but I'm starting to think more about diet and exercise and all the other things that I need to be doing in order to stay healthy. The other add-on benefit to the practice is that they found that as patients start to really pay attention to their records, they get a download from the practice EHR. They're finding errors. So they're calling the practice and saying, hey, I was looking at my personal health record and I noticed that you have me on these five medications, but I no longer take that one anymore. And in fact, it's been replaced with this other medication. And, you know, the first time that happens, the practice isn't quite sure how to respond. But now that they're used to it, they think it's fantastic because they're able to better document encounters and make sure that the information that the practice has in their EHR is in fact accurate and consistent.
You know, it's so interesting. I was with a bunch of docs this weekend, other MDNEs, and we were talking about EHRs, and this happened even before there were EHRs where, you know, you'd take a history, you know, include, you know, the whole thing with the social history, all the stuff that we're trained to gather in a systematic way. But people tend to copy the prior note. So somebody makes a mistake or has a false impression, and it gets perpetuated as doctor after doctor or resident after resident used to hand copy, but now can cut and paste these errors without having anybody who can oversee it and say, hey, you've been saying that I have, I don't know, gout, but in fact, I've never had gout. I have rheumatoid arthritis. So this whole idea of having the patient, you know, the ultimate, you know, kind of owner of the information, be able to come in and have the final say about what is or isn't happening in the course of his or her care is really, I wouldn't underestimate how powerful that could be.
Oh, I agree. And what we're hearing from clinicians is that like anything new, you know, they have a million questions, they have concerns, they're fearful, they're skeptical. But what we hear consistently is that, you know what, once I started to communicate electronically with patients, all my worst fears did not come true. And in fact, what I found is that my patients are more engaged. It changes the nature of our conversation. But what tends to be the most surprising is that it's often the patients who historically have been the least compliant that when they start to use the personal health record, they suddenly become the poster children, the courthouse step conversions that all of a sudden who've struggled, you know, to follow a therapeutic regimen, all of a sudden the light bulb comes on and they start to get better. They start to take their medications. They follow the recommended protocols and therapies. And it only takes a couple of patients like that to take a skeptical MD and turn them into a believer as well.
So Jeff, this is Greg. You said you've been with No More Clipboard 7 years, and during that time, there's been, shall we say, continued movement, refinement as to the state of the industry, so to speak. So for a good portion of the 7 years, you were a surrogate voice out there in a fictional company called Extremity, and you adopted this character of Brantley Whittington. You had a bit of a bit of levity in some of the positions taken and some of the content produced by that company. What was that all about?
Well, sure. One of my early observations when I got involved in health IT was that you had a number of large vendors that were employing practices that many of their customers found to be less than acceptable, and you know, one of the things I was struck by is I went out and talked to people in the industry, I heard over and over these horror stories about, yeah, we have such and such vendor's electronic health record system, and it is ridiculously expensive. The software is inflexible. You know, we've had to change the way we practice medicine to fit the software rather than the other way around. You know, these vendors tell us that, you know, when we ask for a change or a modification, they tell us, well, we'll put that on our roadmap, and the roadmap happens to be, you know, 10 miles long, and requested changes often don't come through for 4 or 5 years, and when they do, they come with a significant price tag. And, you know, I'm used to hearing those sorts of stories in other industries, but not to the degree that I found in healthcare IT. And at the same time, you know, being an old marketing guy, I was trying to come up with, you know, are there some maybe creative guerrilla / viral ways that we might make a name for ourselves and make it clear that our organization operates in a very different fashion. That we work closely with clients, that we're affordable, that we're reasonable, that we can configure our solutions to fit their particular needs and their workflow and their environment. So sitting around one day kind of brainstorming on all of this, hit on the idea of, wow, what if we created a fictional company that is the embodiment of all these complaints that we've heard? So came up with the name Extormity, which is a combination of extortion and conformity. And once I had the name, everything else fell into place. And fortunately, I went to the co-founders of our company and said, "Hey, I've got this crazy idea, but hear me out." And these guys said, "You know what? That sounds great. You know, we're all about innovation. We're all about disruption, about doing things differently, especially in an industry where people don't necessarily always like the way things are being done today." So we created a website. And if you go to extormity.com, you can see this website. It looks just, you know, much like a lot of other health IT vendor sites. It's got an overview of the product line and the pricing structure, and it's got a we created a fictional management team. And as you said, one of the members of the management team is CEO Brantley Whittington, and somehow I got cast into that role. But anyway, we put it out there, and we actually got a couple of bloggers, including Matthew Holt from Health 2.0, to write about it. Well, probably 5 or 6 years ago now, Matthew put a little post out on his blog, and overnight this thing blew up. And in a couple of months, we had literally 40,000 visitors to the Extormity website. And it actually caught us by surprise.
Didn't anybody try and buy anything?
Well, in fact, when we launched it, we didn't tell anybody we were behind it because we weren't sure how it would be received. And frankly, we were a little bit taken aback at the response. And people started, you know, emailing and saying, "Hey, we want to know more. This is hilarious. This is like the Daily Show or the Colbert Report or the Onion of the health IT industry." So we actually enabled people to sign up, and we now have literally thousands of followers. And probably once a month we send out a new little alert just to kind of keep the joke going. But we stayed silent for about 3 years. Nobody knew who was behind it. A lot of people tried to guess, but no one really figured it out. And finally, 2 years ago at HIMSS, we came clean. We had a press conference. And this is what I couldn't believe. The good folks at HIMSS actually asked me to speak at the HIMSS conference in character as Brantley Whittington. So I did. I gave about an hour long presentation, and we just had a lot of fun.
That's great.
Yeah. And ironically, 2 years ago at HIMSS, I think we actually went back and did an analysis. We got more press coverage than any real organization at means, and including our own organization. So just goes to show.
And so for people who didn't have a chance to see your hysterical interview with Matt Holt from HIMSS that we did by that HIBC TV did, I think it would be helpful if you could just share your tagline and a couple of the accomplishments of Extormity.
Well, sure. In fact, like I said, the whole idea behind Extormity was it kind of started as this joke, and I'd love to tell you that it takes a lot of effort to come up with the material. But what's kind of sad is that it's so easy. And in fact, the Extormity positioning line is expensive, exasperating, and exhausting. which unfortunately is something that's kind of a constant refrain that you hear out in the marketplace. But one of the things that we try to do is again have a little bit of fun with this. It's very tongue in cheek, and we're not calling out any one vendor because everybody and even sometimes our organization, we're all a little guilty from time to time of maybe making the wrong choices, but. Ironically, what's happened within our organization is we actually ask the question, what would Extormity do? And we make sure we do the opposite. And sometimes in our executive meetings, we'll talk about an idea, and somebody will say occasionally, that sounds a little like something Extormity would do. And then we all say, yeah, you're right, we're not going to do that. So it's actually become kind of a watchword for us. But a couple of things that we've done to have some fun, we actually, in addition to Extormity, we ended up creating a fake certification organization called CEDI, the Society for Exorbitantly Expensive and Difficult to Implement EHRs. So you can actually go to CEDI.org, and it's a whole separate site that's taken on a life of its own. But we've also, one of the things that we do is we just try to be topical and comment on the latest and greatest. So I will I'll listen to your program. I'll take a look at Healthcare IT News and just see the latest posts and say, that one seems like it's ripe for an Extormity alert. And ironically, at HIMSS this year, one of the announcements was the Commonwealth Alliance. After HIMSS, I actually had about a half dozen people get in touch with me and say, hey, Extormity has the comments on this. So it was sort of a popular demand thing. But we thought, I think the Commonwealth Alliance is an intriguing concept, and I think there's a lot of positives. I mean, anything that has to do with advancing interoperability, we're big fans of. But we thought, hey, we can't pass up the opportunity to at least poke a little fun here. So Extormity announced the Oh Well effort. The whole idea behind Oh Well is that that Extormity applications will now integrate with themselves. So every Extormity application is interoperable now at distances up to 65 feet. And we announced that this level of interoperability will no longer require complex and time-consuming integration. The only real customer requirement is a sizable check. those are the kinds of things that we put out there. Again, it's all tongue in cheek. It's all about having a little bit of fun. But I will tell you that in probably 75% of the situations where we're out talking about our company and what we do, we end up bringing up the Extormity website and saying, look, part of what you get when you work with us is we're not going to operate in this fashion. And I'll tell you, most people are already familiar with it, or they take a look at it and they say, yeah, you know what, we're very familiar with that kind of model, and that's what we want to avoid. So, again, what started out as kind of a lark has turned into something much bigger than we planned, but and everybody keeps saying, well, how long do you think it's going to go on? And our answer is, well, it's going to go on as long as there are organizations out there that continue to employ some of these unsavory practices. We'll use Extormity as a way to kind of shine a light on some of those things and hopefully make them go away over time, but also as a way to differentiate our organization.
So let's pivot to that. Let's talk a little bit more about No More Clipboard. And the thing that maybe comes to my mind is that vision even feasible in the near term? The idea of No More Clipboard, to have this sort of uber utility database capability that's transportable in an easy, secure fashion.
You know, it's I can actually now see the light at the end of the tunnel to the point where we've even started to have internal conversations about the fact that, what's going to happen when the No More Clipboard brand name doesn't mean what it used to? When you have a generation that has never been exposed to walking into a doctor's office and having a clipboard handed to them.
They don't even know what it means.
Yeah, exactly. So and what I've said to our marketing folks is, look, I can't wait for that day. We certainly should start to think about that, but we're still a little ways away from that. But what's encouraging is the sea change that's going on in the industry. And I would say that a lot of it has been fueled by meaningful use requirements. And meaningful use stage one, I mean, it included some patient engagement requirements, and I would classify them as baby steps, but it was a step in the right direction. Meaningful use stage two ratchets them up significantly. And the fact that now any certified EHR vendor will be required to enable a consumer or a patient to be able to view, download, or transmit their health information, that's a game changer. And it's great news for patients and for providers. And then the fact that you have to get at least 5% of your patients to actually use these tools is also a big deal. Even though 5% is a low number, what it means is you no longer can just buy a system that somewhere in the background has this patient engagement functionality that you never promote it or talk about it or use it. Now, because at least a certain percentage of your patients have to use these tools, you got to build it into your workflow. You got to talk about it. You got to promote it. And I think everybody knows that, hey, if we promote it to all of our patients, we'll not only hit the 5%, but we're going to get, we're going to start to see 25, 30, 40% of our patients actually use these tools. And once that happens, we'll see significant momentum. One of the other things that's really exciting that we're seeing is the HIE world is coming to embrace patient engagement. And HIEs, can contribute a lot of value in terms of sharing data with consumers. Because number one, HIEs are already creating connections with providers doing the work of integrating with their EHR and HIE applications. They're then aggregating data from multiple sources into one spot. And if that can then be made available to a consumer, a consumer can now, without a whole lot of significant effort, get data from the five different doctors that they see all in one application. And we've been working in Indiana. We received about 2 years ago an ONC Challenge grant to figure out how do you get HIE data in the hands of the consumer. So we've worked with five HIEs and a dozen pilot sites in our state to figure that out. And now, as other HIEs around the country are learning about that, they're working with us to replicate that. So we're working in the state of Kansas right now to do the same thing and talking with about a dozen other HIEs around the country. So very exciting.
Jeff, let me step in because we're going to conclude the live portion of the broadcast. We've been speaking with Jeff Dinell, CEO of a company called No More Clipboard. And we're coming to wind down the live portion of our broadcast. But, Jeff, if you have the ability to stick around, perhaps we can roll into overtime for a few additional minutes. Get your thoughts on the inpatient movement. Is that an option?
Happy to do so.
Okay, excellent. That's it. Greg Masters saying bye now. Join us next week on another edition of This Week in Health Innovation.
I'm doing the radio show. I need 5 more minutes. What? Yeah.
And continuing on and over time on This Week in Health Innovation, we're talking to Jeff Donnell of No More Clipboard. Pat, could you mute your mic? I'm hearing a lot of background noise.
I got rid of the background noise.
Okay, thank you. So, Jeff, so that might be we have a hard stop on the live broadcast, but in the overtime segment, we get up to maybe an additional 10 minutes to chat, time it, and it records end-to-end in its entirety.
Okay, great.
So part of this creative spark, as a marketing guy and someone who's got, real-world experience in the trials and tribulations of the health informatics industry, the adoption curve, the workflow issues, patient engagement all over the map, you've had this creative spark, which led to the Extormity, and now you're talking about something called the inpatient movement. Tell us a little bit about that.
Sure, and as you said, part of it is the recognition from my marketing consulting background that brands can be incredibly powerful, and if you can create a brand that is compelling, often you can turn that into a movement, and that's exactly what we decided to do when we created the inpatient movement. And really, there were a couple of sources of inspiration for this. One was, the fact we heard from our consumer users as part of our research that they were frustrated by the fact they would take the time to create a personal health record and carefully compile information and curate it, but then they'd show up at the doctor's office and the doctor would say, "Great, that's nice, but here, fill out my clipboard." And our users said, can you give us tools to educate our doctors? And that was an interesting insight to us that, okay, we've got an army of individuals out there who want to go out and serve as vocal advocates, but they need some tools to do so. Second insight for us was that we hear over and over from the provider community, they have questions, they have concerns. They want to know, how can I trust data that comes in from a patient? How are we going to exchange data electronically? Is there any additional level of liability for me in using these sorts of tools? And while I can predict with utmost certainty what those questions are going to be, and realize, okay, we've got to do a better job of educating the provider community on why electronic patient engagement is so important and the benefits that it can provide. And also answer a lot of the questions. And then the third piece was we needed to find a way to connect consumers and clinicians in meaningful ways, and it can't be confrontational or adversarial. We don't want patients saying, doctors just are recalcitrant and they're unwilling to cooperate. We wanted a way to really foster dialogue and collaboration. So that's where we decided, let's create this thing called the inpatient movement. And we realized early on, look, this shouldn't just be a No More Clipboard thing. What we're trying to do is really grow the size of the patient engagement segment. That will benefit many people who are involved, and a rising tide will lift all boats. And ultimately, it's going to be better for patients and clinicians. So we actually teamed up with the folks at Microsoft Health Call, as well as with the Indiana Health Information Technology, which is Indiana's state-designated entity for HIT, and created the movement. And we're now inviting other organizations and individuals to join. But we've created a website at inpatientmovement.org, where you can go, whether you're a consumer or a clinician, and you can learn all about the movement. You can sign up. If you're a patient, you can print out material that you can use to go in and talk to a doctor or a nurse and bring them up to speed on what's going on with electronic patient engagement. You can invite your friends to join. We're also encouraging both consumers and clinicians to share their stories. to talk about not only their frustrations, but situations where they've been able to share data electronically and how that's worked and the value that's created. So we've been working on this for about a year and a half, and we actually announced it at KIMS. The good folks at the Office of the National Coordinator were big supporters. They talked about it in their town hall meeting and in their consumer engagement meetings. And on the show floor at IMSS, we had about 250 individuals who signed up to become inpatients. And then we've continued to get media coverage and to get individuals and organizations to sign up and join the inpatient movement in the 2 or 3 weeks since IMSS.
So I just want to point out that's with an M-I-M, patientmovement.org. And just FYI, I signed up. I'm going to submit one of my stories. So I think it's an interesting idea and maybe connect some dots out there, all of the health activists and e-patients and advocates might find a home in this type of organization. So, Pat, do you have any more questions for Jeff?
No, but Jeff, I just want to congratulate you on all the different ways that you are contributing to the improvement of healthcare, ranging from no more clipboards to the inpatient movement, and of course, humor is the best medicine. So thanks a lot for Extormity MC.
Well, thank you very much, and really appreciate your time today and the opportunity to share a little bit about the initiatives that we're working on.
Well, there you have it. We've been speaking with Jeff Dinell, CEO, No More Clipboard, and co-founder or chief visionary behind the Inpatient Movement. That's inpatientmovement.org. Check it out. And Jeff's organization or company, No More Clipboard, can be found at nomoreclipboard.com. Follow them at Twitter, at No More Clipboard. Jeff, I want to thank you again for your time. Look forward to tracking your progress and keeping posted on your activities. So thanks again for your time today. This is Greg Masters on behalf of Pat Salber, Dr. Pat Salber. You've been listening to This Week in Health Innovation. Join us next week for another episode. Take care now. Bye-bye.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.